Accession number 11940, real 11.
Brigadier PJ Jeffries, real 11. You found yourselves on the mole there, Brigadier.
Well, we travelled up pretty slowly. And we wondered the whole time whether there'd be a boat for us. at the head of the battalion, I forget which battalion was in front of us. It might have been 8th. It would be 8th or 9th. The last men in front of me got onto a Royal Naval ship, a destroyer, I think, that came alongside. And there was no room for us. So I waited with the battalion, hoping that another vessel would arrive. And sure enough, after about half an hour, another vessel came up. It was a minesweeper, Royal Navy, and it came alongside, gangway down, and on we went. We were then in the safe arms of the Navy. They told us where to go, and everybody just tossed down where they were told. The Navy packed that ship, and after a bit, went off. Oh, of course, we thought it might get torpedoed or shot down, but in fact, it wasn't our responsibility, and we slept. And as dawn broke, I rose, got up, had a look. And there you could see those little white cliffs in front of us. And after a bit, the ship came in to dock. And there, on the dock platform, I suppose there were a lot of various people, but Rotter and Prestron with a whole lot of WBS lasses waiting. Well, we were told to get off, but a thing that upset us was that we were told not to take our rifles ashore. All our rifles would be left on the ship. And I suppose they were taken care of by somebody. But we felt, rather, that we should have marched off with our rifles. No. We got down onto the quayside. And after a bit, got into a train. That was that.
The WVS ladies, were they supplying you with food?
Oh, I think we got food. And yes, everybody was rather over us then. Plenty of food, plenty of tea. Then we got into this train. The train took us, I think, to a station not far from Aldershot. It wasn't Aldershot itself, but it was Ash or somewhere like that. And we were tipped out and taken care of by a Canadian battalion who were there. And we were given beds, that sort of thing. I suppose we were rather exhausted, but there wasn't much that we could say. The CO of the battalion asked me if I wanted anything. I said, yes, I'd like a pair of socks. Mine are worn out. Oh, yes, he said, I'll give you a pair of socks. He gave me a pair of socks. And I said, I'd like to send a telegram to my wife. And that was it. That's really all I can remember of that place.
What was the mood of the men at this time? Was there a defeatist mood at all?
No. A defeatist mood, I think, came later. When, you know, the press is what one is much influenced by. And we felt we'd done rather well, really, to get back, to still be a coordinated unit. We were marvellously relieved, of course, to be back in England and alive. No, I don't think we felt we were a defeated army at that time. But later, of course, one began to wonder about it a bit. I think the general mood in England was that it was a great thing to have got its five divisions. Was it five or was it four? I don't know. Back. In some sort of order.
Where did you go after this then, Brigadier?
We went... temporarily to a place's name I can't remember, but there was a murderer there. Can you remember the name? It was in the Midlands, North Midlands. It was just a town in a camp.
Is this Rugeley?
Huh?
Is it Rugeley?
Yes, the Rugeley murderer, do you remember? Anyway, we went to Rugeley.
And you had any leave before this?
No, no leave. We went straight to Rugeley. At Rugeley, of course, we were given new clothing, new equipment. Arms were started to be issued. And the whole battalion started to shake itself out of its rest. And everybody got a few days' leave. And
how were you received back at home after these great dangers?
My wife and one or two other wives descended on us. From County Durham, and my wife had a motor and some petrol, fortunately, and Leslie Proud's wife came with her, and for our 4 or 5 days leave we were able to motor back to blessed County Durham.
How were was the local population receiving the return of the battalion? Were they particularly kind?
Oh, yes, they were overjoyed, I think. I don't really recollect that there was great joy. Of course, we were, in fact, about the last of the BEF to get back. And this evacuation, you must remember, had been going on for about a fortnight before this. So celebrations were a bit old hat by that time.
After your leave, did you return to Rugeley?
No. Perhaps I did for a day or two, but we almost immediately moved down to the Dorset coast.
What condition was the battalion in then when you got to Dorset?
Oh, it began to get pretty good, and we got a lot of reinforcements.
Where did they come from, really?
Strangely enough, most of them came from the Argyll and Sutherland Highlanders, and they were splendid chaps. And they all arrived with their bonnets and their red feather, and it was rather difficult to decide how we were going to use them. I suppose we've got about 150 of them. Did we put them all into one company? Did we split them up? Did we let them keep their Scotch hats and things, or what? Well, they were marvellous chaps. They just arrived with their, as a draft, no officers, some NCOs, but mostly jock soldiers. Well, we dished them out. Some went to one company, some went to another company, some went to a third company, some went down headquarters. Any of them were drivers, went to the MT. and we let them keep their Scotch hats for a bit. And then gradually we wouldn't make any orders about it at first. But they were given our berries. And after a bit they started to use them. And I suppose after a fortnight we said no more Scotch hats. They didn't seem to mind. And I would think a lot of those chaps fought through the rest of the war as Durham Light Infantry soldiers, and damn good ones too.
There was no problems integrating them at all?
No problems at all. Extraordinary, actor. No problem whatever.
Whereabouts in Dorset were you stationed? Whereabouts in Dorset was the battalion stationed?
We were on the coast about 3 miles east of Bridport, and our left company was on the Abbotsbury Swannery at Abbotsbury. So that was the, I suppose we had 4 miles of coast. And we were pretty happy there. Of course, frightened, or rather not so much frightened, but anxious that the coast would be attacked. And we spent a great deal of activity in building defences, and the sappers put defences out into the sea, pillboxes were built, and so forth. But it was nice to be home, and it was a glorious summer.
And what was your position at this time? Were you still commanding the battalion?
Very soon after, we got back. I was superseded by Sammy Battiscombe, who took over command. He, of course, was from the 9th Battalion, and was several years senior to me. I didn't mind. I was happy to serve under an old friend. But he didn't hold it very long. His appointment was superseded by the arrival of Colonel Victor Yate, and he took over the battalion, which he commanded when it went off to North Africa.
How was the companies disposed on the coastline? Because you're in a defensive situation.
It's not very easy to remember, but I think we had three companies No, I think we'd all four companies were forward on the coast. But the companies themselves were in depth. That's to say, they'd, according to the ground, they'd probably have two platoons forward and one platoon back. But it might have been, in some cases, one platoon forward and two back. And then we'd have one company in reserve. That was in reserve at a place called Pummel, I remember.
What was the accommodation like at this time, Brigadier?
well, of course, it varied. But there were various little houses all the way along the coast, and troops were accommodated in those. Pretty well. I don't really remember that it was a problem at all. But of course, there's no sense until there was news of an invasion for the positions to be manned. They were made and they were worked at, and they were exercised in and so forth. But the troops were billeted in the villages further back, not far behind.
How did the local population receive you?
Well, they were very good, awfully good. Yes, they gave us a great time, really. They were very pleased. Oh, yes.
Do you recall your own billets? Do you recall where you were billeted?
Yes, I was in a farmhouse. Oh, I suppose about 2 miles back, a mile and a half back from the coast. Nice farmhouse. And I was there alone with the family. Yeah. Battalion headquarters. I can't remember. We had some house in the village.
What was the equipment situation now?
It wasn't very good. Fairly soon, we got Brens, and fairly soon we got carriers. Of course, rifles, all right. And wireless began to arrive. Oh yes, equipment began to arrive pretty good, pretty well. But I wasn't there very long, because the beginning of September, I was sent to the Staff College. End of my association with the 6DLI.
In general terms, Brigadier, could you tell me what was life like in the Staff College and what things you were doing?
Well, life in the Staff College was very studious. I didn't know what it was going to be like, because although I'd worked for the Staff College examination shortly before the war, when mobilisation came, I was far too busy to go on working. And so that dropped. So it was, I suppose, quite a good thing from a career point of view that I was picked out and sent to the Staff College at that time. And life there was comfortable, studious. We worked very hard, I must say. But we had good instructors, and I enjoyed it. We hired a house, and about 50 yards away from the Staff College in Old Green Lane, and had my family there. I remember...
Where was the Staff College, by the way, Colonel? Where was it?
Camberley. At Camberley. And I remember that one of the closest bombs that came to me during the whole war was when I was at Staff College. And they dropped two bombs on the Staff College while we were there. It broke a lot of windows, and I suppose it wasn't a very big bomb, but it dropped 100 yards from our house at Old Green Lane. And of course after that everybody had to sleep under the stairs and goodness knows what. But it wasn't very serious. London took a terrible bashing at that time.
What areas of study did you follow? What areas of study had you to follow? What were you learning at Staff College?
Oh, how to be a staff officer. But of course it involved deep study of tactics on a higher level. But mostly how to do the staff work necessary at brigade or divisional level.
And how long were you there?
The course lasted 6 months. And then I was appointed to be a brigade major of 140 Brigade, which is a London brigade. And I was brigade major, I suppose, for 6 or 9 months there.
And where was this station?
They were stationed at, first of all, in Malvern, and then they moved to Sussex. And the whole of the time I was brigade major for that brigade, we were in Sussex as a reserve. The brigade was in reserve to the coastal defences.
Do you recall the date of this period?
Oh, it would be 1941. And I think that practically the whole of 1940-41, I was, well, the larger part of it, I was brigade major there. And on conclusion of that, to my great joy, I was given command of battalion of the DLI, which was the 70th Young Soldiers Battalion. And they were stationed then at Newton Aycliffe in County Durham. And I think I'm right that a young soldiers battalion took soldiers in at 17. And they were marvellously keen. The NCOs were older, and they were, as it were, a permanent staff. Although we didn't pass these young soldiers on, and very shortly after I arrived, we moved to a camp at Barnet Castle, alongside the newly organised infantry battle school. And we became the demonstration battalion for the battle school. And that, of course, was wonderful training for the whole battalion, and particularly for all the officers and NCOs, because we did, once a week, we did a live firing demonstration on a battalion level with tanks. It was very good stuff, and it was of course at a time when after the Dunkirk action tactics could be recasted and advanced. And, of course, we were at the fulcrum of that advance in infantry tactics. The young soldiers were quite first class. I can't give too much praise for them. They gave us no trouble. Discipline was absolutely excellent. And they were most tremendously keen. And after I left them, they were commanded by another colonel, Fillingham, for a short time, and then disbanded and dispersed. And the great majority of them, with their officers, went to the 16th Battalion, DLI. And the 16th, I think I could say, was one of the best battalions that the regiment produced during the war. Fought all through the Italy campaign with tremendous distinction. And those young soldiers were really first-class material. And even now, when I go about County Durham, I occasionally meet men who were young soldiers in that old 70th Battalion and remember it, and were then high-class warriors in the 16th. Yes. And the 16th is one of the only battalions that at our reunion, which occurs every early September, has a little minor reunion of its own in the drill hall in Durham City.
Did you have any important visitors during the time that you were with the 70th Battalion?
Well, you asked me that, and of course, there were constant generals always coming to these demonstrations. And, oh yes, we got a pat on the back fairly often from them. I don't really recognize. I think, General Monty appeared up once or twice. But I should think nearly all the distinguished generals, subsequent generals, came there. It was, of course, really the place for the evolution of modern tank infantry action. In the previous conception of tank warfare, the tanks would go in front and the infantry would go behind. But in the modern concept, what was evolved was that the tanks moved into suitable positions from which to shoot the infantry into the objective. And similarly, there was development in artillery tactics. Previously, the plan, the planned use of artillery was for barrages to be put down in front of the advancing infantry, close in front of them. But as tactics evolved, the use of artillery depended much more on concentrations of fire fired on particular positions which they felt would interfere with the infantry attack. So that an infantry attack, as worked out at the battle school, was for the infantry to be supported by the tank fire, and any opposition position blanketed by artillery concentrations.